tea is a broken system. The average consumer does not realise that huge issues sit behind that. A lot of those are very linked to Britain because of past colonialism. They don't realise these risks, and fair trade has very strong solutions in this area.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy. And I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you, your passion becomes theirs, and I call this the power of purpose. Today, I'm joined by Karina Thorogood, Director of Partnerships at the Fairtrade Foundation. Before joining the foundation, Karina worked in senior partnership management roles at the WWF, Breakthrough Breast Cancer, and JETRO, the Japanese External Trade Organization. Karina, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Can you just start by telling us a bit about the journey to where you are today?
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me. So my journey, it's probably been quite an interesting journey. I wouldn't say it's been linear. I'd say I've kind of taken a few twists and turns along the way. It's interesting you mention passion and purpose, because that has really been my North Star as I've always gone through my career choices. I mean, when I went to university, I did actually study geography, and a lot of that was around sustainability. I tried to get into sustainability a lot earlier, to be honest with you. But if you think, it would have been, 20, 25 years ago. And at that time, there weren't as many sustainability roles around. So I think it was quite a tough area to try and carve a way into. And also, I remember at the time, a lot of sustainability roles were housed in the legal team. You had to have legal expertise. They were quite technical. You had to have a PhD. And I think it's quite a different space to where sustainability is now, which is much more about communicating, influencing, negotiating, presenting. So I'm there now, and I'm in the role that I love now. It's just taken a bit of time to get there. So like you mentioned, I spent a bit of time in Japan. When I got back from Japan, I worked for an organization called JETRO, which was a Japanese governmental organization. And it was trying to double foreign investment into Japan, so trying to double the amount of British corporate investment into Japan. So having lived in Japan, I had Japanese language, Japanese knowledge. I supported British companies like Reese to buy fabric from Japan. Reckitt Benckiser set up a R&D facility in Japan. From there, I went to work for Breakthrough Breast Cancer, like you mentioned. Unfortunately, I lost my mother when I was a child to breast cancer. So that was just a role that I felt very passionate about. But that really cemented my career into partnerships. And from there, I went to WWF. And, you know, WWF and partnerships are phenomenal. You know, they're really transforming the sector, particularly the food system, but also our impact on the planet. So lots of different partnerships there, working with John West to help them source more sustainable tuna, through to Sky to help communicate with all their viewers on protecting the rainforest. And then probably the biggest one that I worked on there was with Tesco to halve the environmental impact of a shopping basket. And then today I'm at the Fair Trade Foundation, and I'm the partnerships director, as you mentioned. Loving the role. I think I've really finally found my feet and where I want to be. I took a step from environmental to social, because I feel at the moment that social issues are really almost being not forgotten, but they're second tier to environmental issues. The only way you get a seat in government discussions, corporate discussions, is if you start with net zero and climate topics, and then you come onto the social side. The social side hasn't gone away. It's in fact even worse than it ever has been. So it just felt a role that I could have a real impact and really kind of build on the importance of passion and purpose in what I do. And that's where I am at the moment.
Really interesting. Really interesting. Lots of interesting points there. And, you know, we all know about fair trade, or we think we know about fair trade, and everyone knows about the Fair Trade Foundation. Firstly, I'm very sorry to hear about your early loss of your mother there, but that sounds like you had a very great having that role at breast cancer care. And how did you learn Japanese? I mean, I'm trying to learn Italian at the moment, and I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere. How did you do it? Did you just throw yourself into the country?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can go to Japan really. And I mean, I spent a long time there, spent 3 years there. I don't think you can go there and not learn Japanese because, I mean, it's probably a bit different from 25 years ago. They've had things like the World Cup and lots of different international events probably there. But at the time, nothing was really written in English. So you fully immerse yourself. And I was in the middle of nowhere teaching children across different primary and secondary schools when I was in Japan. So yeah, I think it requires a lot of tenacity.
Yes.
Can-do okay. attitude to okay, get to now the I Japanese know. Language.
Right, I'm gonna tell my wife and kids.
I'm just gonna
go to Tuscany for a year and just leave me alone. So one thing that I'm very interested in is your role as a partnerships director, because usually the people we have on a show are either founders, CEOs, everyone knows what they do, or heads of communications. That's an easier one to describe. But a partnerships director, can you just tell us what the role really involves?
So it's quite a broad role, working across a set of private sector partners, so brands and retailers, that really want to tackle the big social and environmental issues in their supply chain. I've got quite a big team because we're working with businesses in lots of different ways. So I have five teams. Some are working kind of more on the direct impact side. So I have a team that manages all of our partnerships. I then have a programs team that sits within my directorate, an evidence and insights team, which is really looking at the data and really making sure that we can deliver impact statements and show kind of the role that the partnerships are having. I have a team that has coffee experts, flower experts, banana experts, living wage experts and climate experts. So quite a broad team. But yeah, primarily it's working with those partners to try and achieve change in their supply chains through what fair trade does.
Great. And how does your team position the foundation on political issues?
On political issues, that's quite a big topic. I mean, if you take something like climate, so I mean, climate change is huge across the areas that we work in. You can't actually work in fair trade without seeing the impact of climate change. You know, we're talking about, we work in coffee and cocoa supply chains, and we know that within 50 years, 50% of the land available for cocoa and coffee production won't be available anymore. But when you talk with farmers, they're directly seeing the impacts of climate change. So something that's very unique about fair trade, probably that's different to other organisations, is we work very much in the first mile of the supply chain. So we work directly with the producers. So I'm very fortunate. I go out a lot to meet producers in places like Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, Kenya, and they are seeing firsthand practices that they have generations and upon generations that have used to farm just can't do anymore. So take cocoa farmers. They dry out their cocoa beans on tablecloths that sit next to where they live. They've always done that. Or they dry out their cocoa beans on banana leaves. But now they're seeing huge downpours of rain in October, which is when they're harvesting their cocoa beans. So that completely wipes out their crop. You're seeing kind of rising disease and pests come through. So climate change is huge. I think the challenge is, how do we take a big political issue like climate change and bring that back to the UK market? How do we engage government in that? How do we engage consumers in that? I mean, I think from a consumer perspective, we find issues like climate change quite overwhelming. So, you know, we ask consumers kind of about their understanding, awareness of climate change on food. And 75% are aware about the impact of climate change on food. But if we ask them about how they can make a difference, what's their role, I think it's only about 30% would know how to make a difference. So what we've got to do is try and close that gap. So we have campaigns that we launch to really try and simplify the role that consumers can make. So we have Fairtrade Fortnight every year. And this year we launched Fairtrade Fortnight through the lens of Be the Change, where we were just very clearly and succinctly asking consumers to kind of make a bold statement by buying a fair trade product. Because if you buy a fair trade product, you know it's been grown in a way that's better for the planet and helps producers adapt to climate change. We equally took that to Parliament. So we held an event at Parliament and we asked MPs just after the election to sign up to be the change. And we got 90 MPs making a pledge. So I think it's taking these political issues that are so visible in supply chains, but just really simplifying it so people know how to make a difference. And I think the other thing that fair trade is quite uniquely placed to do, and quite a huge asset that we have, is because we work with producers, we can bring producers and their stories directly to the market. So that is quite often our kind of modus operandi. We bring producers to like big retailers like the cooperative to do big presentations. We took producers to COP, the big kind of climate COP conventions. Recently, at the closing plenary, we had one of the farmers from Côte d'Ivoire coming and talking about the importance of climate change and acting on climate change, because there's no better voice to really talk about the issues than farmers who are on the front line of climate change. I mean, they're not seeing things happening in 2040, 2050. They're seeing it happen now. So really bringing out those real stories has always been really important to fair trade as well.
Great. Just bringing you to one of your previous roles, and you mentioned there with WWF and working with Tesco's, the biggest supermarket in the UK. What did partnership look like there? And I think you talked about kind of shopping basket of goods. Just kind of talk us through what that looks like in a partnership for a charity working with a big commercial organisation like Tesco's?
I mean, that when we secured the partnership with Tesco, that was a huge step forward in our work to transform the food system at WF. We'd, bear in mind, this was about 5, 6, 7 years ago. We'd set it out as a mandate that we wanted to achieve. You know, the food system has one of the biggest impacts on nature and climate emissions. So landing the Tesco partnership was incredibly important because it allowed us to work across supply chains. It allowed us to fund programs. It allowed us to do advocacy. It wasn't easy. I mean, being very honest, I think it took me about 2 or 3 years to land that partnership. And that actually is something that's quite challenging when you work in partnerships. How long as a charity do you push things for? Because quite often the businesses get a lot out of it. You know, the businesses are buying into the charity's expertise. So we're giving away a lot of expertise. It takes a long time to finally kind of get the signature on the contract and to go forward. We set out to halve the environmental impact of a shopping basket. I think at the time Tesco had done some work that showed that something like 97% of shopping baskets had the same 20 products in the basket. And so we worked out that just by halving the environmental impact of the shopping basket, we could address a multitude of issues, like I say, from the supply chain side, but also actually through to consumer choice. How could we encourage consumers to start putting different products in their baskets, so more plant-based products, more plants and vegetables, more lentils, more nuts, kind of products that are about the future. I think what was interesting about that partnership is it evolved over time, and that's really important partnerships as well. They shouldn't ever be static, particularly environmental and social issues. These are rapidly changing issues. So it went from being halving the Tesco basket to actually Tesco being braver and saying that was going to be about halving the average basket, not just a Tesco basket. And then we worked together to convene other supermarkets around the retailer's commitment to nature. So 5 other supermarkets committed to the same aims of the partnership. Obviously don't work on it anymore because it was I've been at Fair Trade now for 2 years, but I think it's now come to an end because it has achieved what it set out to achieve. And I think that's quite important in partnerships as well. When you come to a point where actually you've achieved so much together, but you now need to move forward and do something different. You know, you have to recognize that and you have to be honest about that. It's convened the sector. The sector's now using what's called the basket metric. It set up some very good kind of ambitions, targets, tracking metrics, impact. It's also working on innovation. So it's achieved what it set out to do. But yeah, it was a very kind of important partnership for the moment. And I felt, it was quite a proud moment for Fairtrade and Tesco to come together in that way.
And that's kind of created that change that you see now when you go into a Tesco's and you've got a lot more space given over to those plant-based meals. And I like, wherever possible, meat reduction in my diet. So there's those different things there, like the Richard sausages that I can eat and I can get my kids to eat, and the corn mince, and the Viva shish kebabs that you can get in Tesco's. Actually, sounds like it'd be awful. They are absolutely delicious. I definitely recommend those as a plant-based alternatives. And then presumably things like less soya, which has been damaging to rainforest, and just doing those things to reduce what people are choosing. And you're doing it with a kind of carrot rather than a stick method there, where you're actually just placing goods in front of people's eyes and at different eye levels, and putting the stuff that is more carbon intensive at different places in the supermarket. Really fascinating stuff. Tell us about how a failure or an apparent failure at the time has set you up for later success.
Interesting. Where would I go? I think not all the partnerships that I've worked on have been successful. That has then helped me. I've learned from that and then built stronger partnerships. I think times are changing now, and it's hard not to build a partnership with substance or a partnership with purpose. I think probably in previous years, some of the partnerships that were built by charities and corporations were a bit empty, were a bit tokenistic, were maybe quick wins that were about getting quick funds and kind of quick PR. I can think of quite a few examples. I won't name them because that would be very unfair on the brands. But I think what I've learned from that is that the partnership isn't sustainable. It won't carry on unless it has substance, because it will get picked holes in. Consumers are very wise to that. Millennials are wise to that, and they're spotting greenwash. But new people will come in and they'll axe the partnership because they'll see that it's not having the right impact. And that's a shame, because partnerships do take a long time to set up. So I think it's really important when you're working with a partner to really think about what's the kind of the really material impact that you can kind of strive and achieve together. I think something that we're trying to do a bit more at Fair Trade is be a bit bolder with our communications, be a bit braver. I think one of the challenges when you're a certifier, so Fair Trade is a movement, but what sits core to Fair Trade is the Fair Trade certified products. And so when a risk hits, and often risks are very frequent in social supply chains, I'd say more so than environmental supply chains, people that you can have the strongest protections, the strongest standards, but people are people and people will still do things. And when a risk hits, and we see a lot of risks in tea, for example, Fair Trade's approach, because we have a very strong standard, because we have producer networks on the ground, is to go into, to do exactly what we should be doing. Go straight into those producer groups and understand the situation, ground truth the situation. If, you know, there is, I mean, most often it isn't a Fair Trade supply chain because of the interventions that we have in place, but if it is, to make sure we are very promptly putting in remediation. And that's where Fair Trade is uniquely, can kind of uniquely play a role. What happens though is that we're not then perhaps as bold and brave as we could be communicating to the outside world, this is why you need Fair Trade, because we're trying to almost cross, dot every I and cross every T before we say anything. And I think that's probably something that we need to do more at Fair Trade, because it is very clear that these risks are huge in supply chains. I mean, tea is a broken system. The consumer, the average consumer, does not realise that when they, I brewed a few cups of tea this morning, that huge issues sit behind that. A lot of those are very linked to Britain because of past colonialism. They don't realise these risks, and Fair Trade has a very strong solution in this area. So we should be much more open and much more upfront about communicating on that. So it's not quite a failure, but I think it's something that we need to do more of. In fact, some of our Fair Trade counterparts in different markets are much braver. So I think, you know, you're going to see much more from Fair Trade in the UK, particularly on tea, in the future, about really kind of highlighting why you shouldn't be able to buy a tea bag for 8p. Yeah. Because so much more sits behind that tea bag to get it to a supermarket shelf, and we need to be bolder than that.
Yeah, well, I've had the head of communications, Nicola, of Tony's Chocolonely on a previous episode, and they really talked about the honesty behind the fact that they can't, even in their own supply chain, they can't 100% say there aren't children working in their supply chain just because of the way it works. So, you know, having that honesty there and saying, all chocolate that is eaten, there is a risk that there are children working in that cocoa, in the way the cocoa is produced, because it's still produced in small villages, and you can't be sure that the children of the people that work in that cocoa aren't also, you know, in their houses and working within that industry. So I think that took a lot of honesty to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes back to poverty. I mean, you can't expect producers to keep their children out of school or not deforest the local area unless they're paid a proper price. I think the other area that we're looking much more into at Fair Trade and we're evolving is moving away from bilateral partnerships to multi-stakeholder partnerships. So we've launched a new initiative called Shared Impact. It's had quite a lot of press attention. That's been quite exciting. And it's about retailers and brands joining up together to pool their sourcing around specific producer groups that really have an ambition for change. Because one of the challenges we have is you have a supermarket. They need to spread their sourcing to minimize their risk, their climate risk, their commercial risk. So therefore you have producer groups that only have a small amount of their produce sold on fair trade terms. If we can get different supermarkets to actually really consolidate their sourcing around some specific, different retailers to consolidate the sourcing around specific producer groups, we can increase the amount of produce sold on fair trade terms. We can then help comply, you know, support businesses comply against legislation like HRED coming through, EUDR coming through, and then at the same time, we can help producer groups kind of secure more produce on fair trade terms that has those kind of pricing interventions and pricing support. So it's a really rapidly changing area, lots to learn. And I think the key thing is just keep innovating, keep thinking differently about how the model can work. And we're quite excited about Shared Impact and what that's going to do in the future.
Exciting. What do you do to unwind?
Oh, what do I do to unwind? I spend quite a bit of time with my children. That seems like a lot of people would say, how can you unwind with your children? But I think because my working day is quite different to my children, and they are 8, no, they're not, they are 10 and 12. So I spend time with them because I think they take my mind completely away from work because it's completely different. I do quite a bit of walking with my dog. I listen to different things as I'm walking my dog. I try to travel a bit with the kids because I'm very fortunate enough that I get to go to exciting places with fair trade, meet exciting kind of producers. So I really want the kids to experience something similar. I have to save quite a few pennies to do that. But I think it's really important to take them to different places. So, yeah.
Nice.
If I find time to unwind, that's how I unwind.
Yeah, you've got children a similar age to me, and I think it's quite a nice age. My daughter's 11 tomorrow, and my son's 13, and they're not quite, you know, completely moody teenagers yet, and they're old enough that you don't have to worry about them running into a road, which obviously you do for the first few years of their life. And how about, you just talked about listening to things, what form of media do you like the most?
So I listen to stuff when I'm marching from Bank Station to Aldgate, where the office is, and I do go to newscast quite a lot because I find it's quite digestible summary of the news of the day, particularly when things are quite busy and I don't have time to listen at length to what's happening. And you know, you get stuck in a meeting room and you come out and you think, what's gone on? So newscast is my go-to at the moment, particularly around the American election. I listen to Audible books. I'm at the moment listening to the J.D. Vance one called Hillbilly Elegy. Have you listened to that?
Okay, no, I haven't. No.
It's a good one, and it will probably give you a bit more context as to why what's just happened in the US has happened. It's obviously Vance, and he is talking about where he grew up, which is kind of real working class America, and a lot of poverty, a lot of people disillusioned with what's happening, and nowhere to go, nowhere to turn, which is why I think they've turned in the way that they have. So yeah, it's given me a bit more kind of context to why it is happening, what's happening is happening. And you know, everyone knows Trump, but who is this guy Vance that sits alongside Trump? So it's actually quite a good one to listen to him and his views. Not sure I agree with them all, but an interesting one.
No, thanks for that tip. I'll listen to that. And it's funny, I've been podcasting for 6 years, and I've always asked that kind of question: what do you, what media do you use? And I know that there's probably going to be a bias to people that agree to come onto my podcast that they like podcasts. However, I've got more and more people saying I'm listening to podcasts. And as you know, in the recent election, both Kamala Harris and Trump both chose podcasts as places, which is a real move in this election, over the traditional TV interview format. I think podcasts are really continuing to grow. I think it's one of the few mediums that are really continuing to grow. What message would you give to your younger self?
Oh, so I would say kind of believe in yourself more. I think it took me quite a long time to believe in myself. Tended to kind of be a bit more of a people pleaser. I think you do when you're in junior roles, because you're making up for your lack of experience, you're making up for your lack of knowledge, so you people please. So I think I did that too much early on. And actually, there was one thing that struck me with this question, which is we have a Kent, so the chair of the Fair Trade Foundation is a Kenyan lady called Ngoy Ngombo, and she always shares this African phrase with us. And she always says, if you ever think you're too small to make a difference, try spending a night with a mosquito. It's apparently an African saying. And I think that's a good one. And I quite often say that to my kids. You know, you don't get any more powerful than a mosquito.
I like that. Yeah. If you could have dinner with anyone alive or dead, who would it be?
That's such a difficult question.
It can be more than one person. You can have a dinner party if you like.
Okay, first thoughts were David Attenborough. The reason being that he's an ambassador at WWF, and I spent so many times meeting him, introducing him to partners, but then having to take a step back. So I never actually personally got time to spend with him beyond making those connections. I think if I'm being really honest, like if it could be anyone dead or alive, I'm not that obsessed about famous people. So I was going to go, actually, I mentioned it earlier on, my mum passed away when I was little as a child. Love to meet her again, introduce her to my children, tell her about what I've been up to over the last 25 years. And probably sit down and spend some time with her, because you did say dead as well as alive.
Indeed. Well, how good would that be? What a nice thought to leave on. Karina Thorogood, Director of Partnerships at the Fair Trade Foundation. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose. If you'd like to know more about how Higginson Strategy supports purpose-led organisations, please visit higginsonstrategy.com.